What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in, as always, though the as always has been very rare as of late, because I know we haven't released an episode in well over a month, and there's no one to blame except for me on that one. Sorry. But first things first, remember, if you are a true supporter of the show, this is something that I do on every episode, which is to say, we are supported by the fans. So go to patreon.com/kindaneat if you are a weekly listener and a weekly supporter and you love the music videos and you love the podcast. Go to patreon.com/kindaneat and pledge about $1 an episode. Don't pledge 20 so that I have to email you and tell you, like, yo, if you pledge 20 bucks, then you're going to be spending 80 every month, and that's too much. Like, that's more than HBO Go. Like, just fucking pledge $1 an episode. At the most, that'll ever be is $4 a month. And it helps greatly, and we appreciate it. Thank you to everyone that does that. I love you so much. That being said, it's been a long month. It's been a long month off. We have been having some issues with scheduling. For some reason, I'm on a real cold streak, or I guess I'm on a hot streak of flakiness. Like, for some reason, I've had 6 artists in the last 2 months of booking these flake on me. Like, about 3 of them have flaked while we're in the studio waiting for them. And it's very disheartening. I don't really know why it's happening. It's a pain in the dick. And then sometimes after they do it, after they, like, don't show up, then they just stop responding to emails afterwards. And I don't really understand that. I think I'm a pretty, like, personable guy and pretty understanding. So it's like, ugh, why do that? I'll tell you this. Let me tell you something about life. Let me tell you something about communication. I'm a firm believer that a no is better than no response. If somebody hits you up and says, hey, you know, da-da-da-da-da, we should do this, we should do that, and you're not interested, just go, hey, you know what, I'm going to have to pass. But don't just, like, not respond. Or, like, if it's like, hey, if somebody hits you up like, hey, should I keep pursuing this? Or does that flake mean you're not interested? Just say, like, I'll just reach back and go, yo, man, sorry about that. But nah, I'm not gonna do it. I'll be like, cool. That saves everybody time, because then I don't have to follow up no more. Or you don't have to follow up no more. Anybody. And it's just, like, it's just good communication. Just be a good communicator. So, in the last month, I have been traveling a little bit for photography. That's been picking back up. I've been shooting a lot of my own shots for various blog features that I've been doing. And that's been fun, getting back into the photo stuff, which I haven't really been doing as far as, like, actually picking up the camera to shoot. I haven't really done that in, like, I don't know, 10 years or something. So that feels kind of nice. I'm, like, slowly building up a little body of work all of a sudden, which is pretty cool. Shooting people like, you know, Daye Jack, and shooting like Denzel Curry and all these folks. So it's been cool. I had a funny story that I wanted to tell you that I wrote down. And so I'm going to get into that, and then we'll get into the guest today. So last month, I went to Florida for a photo shoot. And the day before I was leaving, it was a weekend, and on Sundays in my neighborhood, you can park all day, like, risk-free, no parking tickets, no moving, no street sweeping. You know, most of the areas around my neighborhood are, like, two-hour parking, which is a real bitch, because I don't have a parking space. I've talked about that in the past. It is a hassle, but I make do. And so I found a parking space on this side street. And left my car there. I left it there Saturday. It's an all-day spot, so I left it there Saturday, and then I left it all day there Sunday, and just walked various places if I needed to leave the house. And when I went to go move my car on Monday, because I had some various chore to do, I noticed that my car was surrounded in yellow caution tape and had, like, roadblocks set up around it and cones. And I was like, what the fuck? And I was parked next to, like, a big dumpster, but, like, a portable dumpster. And as I get closer, there's signs on the dumpster that say, like, it just in, like, printer paper in big bold letters, don't park 20 feet from dumpster, construction zone, don't park. And then I get closer, and there's shit taped to the back of my car. There's one of those printouts from, just like I'm saying, like, a home computer printer that says, construction zone, don't park within 20 feet, and they taped it to my fucking trunk. And then I get to the front of my car, and they had taped all four sides of that same piece of printed paper to my windshield. And then this is all with clear packing tape. And then they fucking tape a big ass X of clear packing tape across my windshield. And at this point, I'm like, yo, this is fucked up. And this is also just like petty and like blatant. Like, but the other thing about it was I knew it wasn't some city shit because there were no parking tickets on my shit. But beyond that, like, if it were something where I was actually parking in a zone that was like a city construction, they would have just towed my shit. They wouldn't have put construction tape around it, and they wouldn't have taped, they wouldn't have touched my car, because that's fucking vandalism, you know? And so my brain is processing all this as I'm like looking at this petty shit. I start calculating what I'm gonna do for retaliation, because I'm like, this is clearly just some like bullshit construction workers that are salty that I parked in a fucking legal parking spot that's too close to their dumpster over the weekend, and it's some foul shit. So I was like, all right, here's what I'm gonna do. I remember what I was doing. I was going to do laundry, and so I take my laundry, and at first I just politely like move the cones and move the roadblocks and get my car out of the caution tape, and I just put everything gently next to the dumpster. And then I dipped out because I was like, I don't know who's watching. And it was a Sunday, and there's people out walking around and shit. So I did everything really polite because I'm a nice person. And then I drive to the laundromat, do my clothes, blah, 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 come back and park. While my stuff is in the washer, I'm like, you know what? I thought about it more, and I was like, this is some fucking bullshit. Like, these are just some asshole construction workers. I'm going to go back there, and, like, they fucked with my shit. I'm going to fuck with their shit. So I go back, and I take all the roadblocks and the cones and all the caution tape and shit. First and foremost, I rip off the signs that say no parking near this dumpster or whatever. I rip those off, throw them in the dumpster. Because here's the thing is, like, you shouldn't put shit protecting a dumpster near a dumpster, because a dumpster is just a big-ass trash can. And so I lifted up the roadblocks and I threw those in the dumpster, and then I lifted up the cones and I threw those in the dumpster, and I ripped down all the caution tape and I threw those in the dumpster. And then I walked back to my apartment, and no one was any the wiser. And then and part of the reason that I was down to do this, like, I had done all these calculations in my head of like, I wonder if these construction workers wrote down like my license plate number or like my make and model or something, like, if I park too close, are they going to come try to retaliate on my shit? And I was like, none of this really matters because it's Sunday, and on Monday I'm leaving for Florida for a week, and my car's not going to be anywhere near this neighborhood. And by the time I get back, they'll forget. So, like I said, I threw all that shit away. And then I continue on throughout my day, go to do my laundry, et cetera, et cetera. But I keep like kind of looking back and walking through this alleyway to go see if like anybody has done anything or taken the shit out of the dumpster. And by the time I'm done folding my dried clothes, so this is probably about 2 hours later, coming back to my crib, I'm driving back, I noticed that there was a Mini Cooper parked in the spot that I was parked in initially. And all is fine and well. I'm like, see, if you leave a spot open that looks legal in a neighborhood, people are going to park in that, because street parking in Los Angeles is a rare commodity. So I see that Mini Cooper, go back to my house. I'm like, good. Somebody parked there. Fuck those construction workers. The next morning, I drive by on my way to the gym just to look at it. Somebody had gone in there, pulled out all that shit out of the dumpster, and they did the same motherfucking thing to that Mini Cooper. They had it flagged off with roadblocks and caution tape, and had taped shit to their car too. And I was like, ooh, those motherfuckers. And then after the gym, I flew to Florida, and then I had a week of sunny Floridian photography action. That's the end of that story. Kind of didn't really come to a great climax, but the point is, don't be petty. Like, be nice to people. Don't fuck with people's cars. Like, it's some foul shit. So anyway, I'm glad to be back. I know last time, like two episodes ago on the Earth Gang episode, I said that, oh, we're gonna be on a roll, I've got all these episodes booked. And I don't know. Right now, it looks like that again. It seems like I have a lot of episodes booked. I've got this one today. It looks like I have one coming up on the weekend and the week after that. Like, it seems like I'm going to be on a roll. But if I've learned anything about this show, it's that anytime that I think it's comfortable and getting back into a cruise control position, anything could go wrong. So I'm hoping that we'll get a few episodes out in a row, like week by week to you guys. I'm sorry that I have not been doing that. It's not that I am not dedicated to this. I promise you that. I work very hard trying to make these happen. It's just there's been some unfortunate circumstances that have not been working out for some reason. But there are new episodes in the works, I think, hope, and believe. But today's episode is a young lady named Jizzle. And full disclosure, usually I do these intros after I do the interview, but today I'm doing it before because we got here a little early. So I haven't had the conversation yet, but I'm imagining that it's probably going to go great and that it was a great conversation that you guys are going to get to listen to. But what I know about her right now is that she is a rapper with a very just deep and aggressive sounding voice, and she's a great songwriter. And from my understanding, she has written for a lot of artists, including Ty Dolla $ign and Diddy. And yesterday she just had a video come out with Lupe Fiasco. And so she's out here doing it. She has a great mixtape called 7 Days in Atlanta. And I think she has another one coming out called 7 Days in Denver. She has a bunch of tapes coming out that are like 7 days in different cities. And I think by the end of this year, we're going to be hearing more and more about Jizzle because she's super talented and clearly a very fucking good songwriter. So without further ado, here is my interview with Jizzle. You're from out here, yeah? From California?
Yeah, I'm from L.A.
What Los part? Angeles.
I grew up on the west side of South Central.
I heard you on one of the tracks, you shout out the Ocho, right?
Yeah.
Is that like 108th, 108th Street?
It's actually 38th Street. I grew up on Exposition.
Okay.
And then, yeah, you know, the 8, the Ocho.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
How did your family end up in Southern California?
Well, half of my family is Belizean. Half of my family is from Southern United States,
right,
America,
right,
like
right.
Texas, right. Louisiana, like a variation of that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I you know,
right.
We all just kind of came to
so
California
you're just born
to get
out
the
here.
Sun. Yeah, yeah, I'm from L.A.
From
yeah.
L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah,
born and raised.
How was it growing up in West South Central?
What was
it
cool.
like? Tell me about
interesting.
It.
I feel like if you, I've always been very thankful to kind of have direction very early and kind of know what I wanted to do and what I thought I wanted to be at a young age. And so it wasn't as hard or as difficult as it looked like in the movies.
Like navigating.
Yeah.
Right.
Nah, but, you know, I had fun. I felt
right.
like it was cool. But I also know that I was very fortunate to end up, you know, just the way I ended up,
right.
like, to come in.
Well, how young were you when you knew what you wanted to do?
I was probably about 12.
Really?
Some of my family members would tell me differently now. They were like, you were younger. You don't know.
Right.
But I feel like I was like 11 or 12 years old. And I did a poetry reading. And
your own work or somebody else's work?
Not my own work.
Okay,
I've been writing. I started writing when I was about... And it's so weird to talk about because it's like, how you know when you started writing?
Right.
But I like, I started writing in like the second grade.
Second grade.
When I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I actually used to write my dad, who was in jail at the time.
Yeah.
Me and him would write letters. And then I started writing in school. I would just write poetry because they would have us do like journal readings. And then that kind of turned into me just writing poetry. So I used to write poetry. And then when I got to the sixth grade, I had a teacher. I was kind of like, I wasn't failing, but I wasn't getting an A or a B, which is what I wanted. And she told me if I do the poetry reading as extra credit, then she'll give me an A in the class. So I was like, I'll do it. Fuck it, you know? And then, so I thought about it and I was like, well, I don't want to really do a poem. I'd rather do a rap, you know?
Right.
And so that's when I tried to write my first rap. And then I wrote my rap, and I rapped it at the reading. And then once I performed it, and everybody, like, kind of clapped and did the thing.
And that was your first Billboard
chart-topping
hit all
they
of a
were like, encore, encore. I'm like, okay, well, I got something. I'm gonna stick to it, you know. And then yeah,
like, did they really ask for the encore?
They did.
Like, oh no, shit.
I promise. Yeah. Scouts honor.
Really?
Never lie.
Did you have more bars on deck?
I just rapped the song again.
I just did it again.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Do you remember what it was about? Like, not, you don't have to recite it, but just like summarize it.
No, I do. Actually, it was called "God's Got a Plan."
Yeah,
and it's kind of funny because I don't remember all the words, but it was just like, gonna take you from New York all across the land.
Yeah,
something, something, something. Because God's got a plan.
Hell yeah!
And that was my first rap song.
Nice,
and I feel like it's true.
That's amazing. That really was very early on. You knew what you wanted to do. So
I did.
Did you start following that path immediately then? Like, were you, did you just keep writing and writing and writing and,
I did.
Recording?
Well, I didn't really get into the studio until I turned like 14. So
until you turned 14.
Like yeah.
Why'd you wait so long? No, I'm just kidding. That's very
but
young.
You know, but I did wait. I did wait because I didn't even really rap for people, you know, outside of who was in the room, which were like my parents, the people who attended the reading. I didn't rap for other people for like 2 years till I was like 14 and I felt like I was good.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I started battling around the city.
Really?
Yeah, me and my uncle, we made a group and we would write together. I have an uncle who's only 2 years older than me.
Right.
He's also a part of my team. Shout out to Go. But yeah, help me. You know, we would help each other develop like our writing skills. So we wrote together for like 2 years before we rap for anybody.
What was you guys' group name?
We had a couple.
Yeah. Were they any good?
Yeah, they were super good. Yeah. We had like, it was just me and him together. Our group was called You and I.
Really?
Yeah, before you
before
and
the
I.
Before the other You and
it
I.
It was crazy.
Really?
Thurs, shout out my bro Thurs.
Hey,
shout out
Thurs, that's my homie too.
Nah,
hey,
Thurs
we've had Jonas
is my bro.
On the show, yeah.
Yeah, nah.
Those
are
my people.
Yeah, family. Yeah. But yeah, we kind of had the name first, but we let it ride. You
Ooh.
Know what I'm saying?
Ooh.
We were kids,
yeah,
you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
And we just thought it was cool. We actually made a song called that, and then we're like, oh, that'd be a dope group name.
Right.
And then we also had a collective called The Boogie, and then my uncle went on to have his own group.
Yeah.
Which I kind of dropped out a little bit because I wanted to do more of the rap thing, and they were in an experimental phase, and they went on to like tour the world. And
what kind of experimental phase?
Like they just did like, you know, like kind of, they just kind of explore with the music.
Yeah.
I just wanted to gas, you
right.
know what I'm saying?
Right.
All gas, no brakes.
Right.
But yeah.
So
yeah.
You brought up an interesting point earlier, like growing up in South Central, there's so many movies made about it and you're like, oh,
yeah.
It wasn't like the movies. And the people that listen to this show get tired of me saying this, but I grew up in Alaska, right? And so like there's so many TV shows about Alaska and they're not like the reality of Alaska whatsoever.
Well, what the hell's Alaska like? I have one friend though who lived in Alaska for
really?
Like 2 years.
I'll tell you, it's like, it's the same way that somebody would ask you, what's it like growing up in South Central, is what I would say. It's normal. Like, it's just what I knew. You know what I mean? It's just a small rural area where I was at, you know.
Yeah.
Trailer parks and shit. Normal middle class shit. Whatever. But, like, yeah, how's that, like, watching the representations of South Central in the movies compared to real life as a kid? What is that? How does that make you feel about your hometown?
Was different because, like, in some instances, it's accurate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then in other instances, it's like, it's exaggerated
right.
or elaborate. And it's not something that should scare you as, you know, I'd probably be just as scared living wherever you grew
right.
up. And there were different type of things going on in the environment. I never really thought about where I would, well, you know, when I grew up, it wasn't a thing until I became older and people would ask you.
Like, oh shit.
Where are you from? Where did you grow up? Oh my God, you're cool. Where are you from?
Right.
You know, and then it's like, oh, you from there? I don't know that many cool people from there.
Uh-huh.
Or I do. I know super cool people from there. So I think it's all context and point of reference. But for me, you know, I'm just a soul who came here to have an experience.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And it's just my experience.
Right. Did you have a lot of family down there or out here?
Yeah. A lot of my family's here. A lot of my family is everywhere.
Right.
I have a huge family, so.
Did you get to travel a lot as a kid
everywhere.
To other places where your family was at?
Yeah, I've traveled a lot through my whole life.
Well,
that's
I'm sure
of, like,
at this point, yeah.
But yeah, that's it's so funny. That was that's always something that's always been near and dear to me. I'm happy to have that experience of traveling and being in different environments and seeing different people so early, you know.
Right.
I think I flew on the plane for the first time when I was like 8 years old.
Right.
And I was Some people do it earlier. Some people never do it. But that was always a good thing for me because I'm not scared of it.
Right.
And I, you know, that helps me.
You get to experience the world. You be cosmopolitan, man. You feel me? Yeah. Chameleon.
A lot of people, yeah, a lot of people were scared to fly.
Right, you know, right. So you said dad was in jail and you guys would write letters. So were you at home living at mom's house then?
Yeah.
What is go ahead.
Yeah, well, my grandmother raised me. Okay. So I lived with my mom. We kind of all lived together growing up. Up until I was about 8 or 9. And then I just lived with my grandmother. She got sick and so.
What kind of sick?
She had like a heart attack at that time.
Minor
heart attack, yeah. And then, I kind of stayed to kind of help her out. You know what I'm saying? And so.
You had siblings living there too?
Well, yeah,
How many brothers and sisters?
I have 2 brothers and sisters.
Are you the older?
3 god brothers. I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest?
Yeah.
I just read some, I'm an older brother too, and I just read some study that says, like, we're the smarter children. Like, and statistically speaking, the oldest children are smarter than their siblings because we get more alone time with adults.
Maybe. I don't know. My my baby sister's a genius.
Is she smart?
Really?
Yeah.
So. My little brother's pretty smart.
You're close with them, or are you guys close in age?
No.
No?
Well, I'm 4 years older than my little brother, yeah. 6 years older than my little sister.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. We're close, like, in relationships, so it's all good.
Yeah.
They know what time it is.
Right, right. So what did so you're living at your grandmother's house. Was your grandfather there?
Well, my grandfather, they weren't together, this was my mother's mom.
Yeah.
And so they weren't together, but my grandfather would be there.
Okay. And what did the adult influences in your life, like, what did they do for careers or work or what have you? You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to just figure out the experience that you had.
How
did Jizzle become Jizzle?
What are you doing?
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I've always had, like, close relationships to, like, older people.
Yeah.
Which you go back, like, what brings back to your point with being the oldest. I've always gotten along very well with adults and older adults. I've always respected my elders.
There you go.
Understood that they did have something to teach me and offer to me. They always thought I was just, you know, even and not, like, as crazy as the kids sometimes. Because I was very observant. But I do have family members in the music industry, like my aunt.
Yeah.
My dad's little sister, Cognac, she was in Doggy's Angels, which was a group signed to Snoop Dogg, when I was like 13. I was able to go to the video shoots and to the studio. And I used to write, me and my uncle, we would write to her beats, like whatever little beats she had on her cassette tape. Battle Cat beats. Shout out Battle Cat.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, see, you had like a little bit of your like outlier experience where you're getting to see some stuff.
Oh, yeah, all the time. My other cousin was signed to Death Row.
Really?
Yeah, like Suge Knight came to my grandma's house before.
There you go.
Like, yeah, you know. So I had like introductions to the game and just being around the things. And then maybe sometimes you don't apply it. But maybe so. Because that whole time, I was like writing my songs on the computer, you know, downloading all my beats in the computer in the house, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, when you're a 12-year-old writing your first raps and shit, who were the rappers that you looked up to that made you want to gas?
Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
For me, Lil Wayne, but I would listen to everything. I was like heavy into just downloading music.
Yeah.
I know Mos Def and Pharrell Monch was.
Is that like, where you got You and I from?
Teamed up and they did a thing. You know what? I don't know.
You and I verse. I remember that Black Star song where they talk about You and I.
I don't know, but I know I was listening to them. Yeah. I was listening to everything.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I was downloading all the songs and selling the mixtapes when, like, Dipset and State Property were beefing and, like, like I was up on all the beefs and, like, this is what you need to hear. You
right.
know, I made my whole school rap so I could rap, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's tight. By the time you get in the studio when you're 14, like, who gave you the studio time? Who, like,
my grandma.
Yeah.
My grandma on my dad's side. My grandma, she paid for it was our studio time. Me and my uncle were in the groups. She would take us to the studio.
Where was it at?
Orange County.
All the way to Orange County?
Yeah, we were living in Rialto.
Okay.
I was going to Rancho Cucamonga. She would drive us to Orange County.
Yeah.
It was like 30, 40 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And wait in the car for us for 4 hours, reading the newspaper.
Really?
Yeah, while we rap.
How many songs did you get done in 3 or 4 hours?
Probably like 4.
Really?
Yeah.
And you guys already had beats on deck and just would like already written, and it was just kind of the recording process.
Well, it was, well, sometimes we were, we went for the first few times. It was a producer named Rhythm D.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of like a legend out here. Worked with like older artists. Okay. Like Eazy-E and everything. I don't know back then.
Right.
She paid him to do our demo, so.
How did she know him?
She met him probably, you know. My grandma's one of those people, you know, you tell her what you want to do, she gonna figure it out.
She figured it out.
Yeah.
And so that first time in the studio, was it life-changing? I mean, tell me about it.
I don't know. I just was like, I'm in the studio. I don't even remember, just man. I've been normal. In the studio so long.
Well,
now.
That's what I'm kind of getting at, is that now it seems like.
Like now, I'm like, I don't know.
It's been your life for so long. Well, yeah, so.
Like now, the studio is like breathing. It's that's like, just, I got to go every day. Like,
right,
I
you're
don't
just
know.
In the
it's
studio.
Like, I don't, you know, it's like you play basketball. Like, I just came from the studio, came over here.
Right.
When I leave here, I'm going to go back to the studio.
And then you just got back from club. Denver when you were in the studio.
In the studio, yeah. Like, I really just mapped my life around studio, and then.
Yeah.
Everything else is whatever, you know?
Has that kind of creative drive just always been there, like ever since you started? It seems like you don't stop writing, right?
I don't think so.
Like,
now I just, like, I think back then I would just, back then I wrote so much. I just remember that. Like, it was just because I didn't have enough beats and I didn't know enough people. I didn't have enough studio time. I just didn't. And now I'm like, now I just don't have enough of everything else. You know what I'm
enough
saying?
Enough time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I go to the studio because it just gives me that feeling and I know what I'm supposed to do there. And so, like, you know.
Right.
This is a different process, but it's the same thing, I guess. I don't know. Ideas.
Right. Take me through the journey then. How long is it before things start popping off and artists start reaching out to you and labels or whatever? You know what I mean? So you're 14-year-old, you're recording demos with your uncle. And like, I mean, do you get through high school?
Yeah. I get to like my junior year.
Yeah.
And then my junior year, I went to the rehearsal for the Yeah video shoot with Usher.
Oh, shit.
And then I, my godmom was managing me at the time. I battled Usher's dancer. Because at this point, I'm battling now. I'm battling around the city.
Dancing or
anywhere.
Rapping?
Rapping. Yeah.
Okay.
I can't really dance.
Well,
so
you were like, I battled his dancer. And I'm
but
like,
I did because, you know, everybody. We,
they were all
you
rap.
Know, multiple
everybody
times. Exactly. Yeah. So his dancer was like the best freestyler.
Okay.
I was freestyle battling too. So
was it over beats?
That was fly. I don't know if we had a beat at that time.
Yeah.
Because it was a rehearsal hall.
Right.
So I think it was just acapella.
Right. And this is your junior year, you said?
Yeah, okay. My junior year.
Okay.
I almost failed driver's training.
Right.
He almost kicked me out because I missed too many days. You go for a week so you can get your license early.
Right.
And then I was like, bro, I got to go to this video shoot. Like, I don't know what you want me to do.
Sorry, man. I got rap battles. Like, it's far more important.
I'm like, I got to go.
Right.
And he was just like, well, I don't know. But then I think I just annoyed him so much in class. He was just like, here, you could.
So what happens at the battle? Did you just?
I beat him in the battle, and Usher was and Mark Pitts were there, and they were like, "We want to sign you," and they didn't. But it was because no one knew how huge, or maybe they did, but Confessions would be that album.
Right.
It was phenomenal, huge, incredible.
I mean, you were at the rehearsal for like his biggest song almost, arguably.
Exactly.
Like, it's a huge song. Yeah.
So it was like they didn't really have the infrastructure. This is pre-Justin Bieber.
Right.
And, you know, Rico Love was there, but new, and it was just, you know, it was very, very early. And then so we realized that wasn't really going to happen. And so we tried, you know, we start shopping me.
Right.
Yeah, the brand, the music or whatever. And got offers on the table. Eventually, I thought I would sign Pharrell, which is Kuda Love's label. He used to manage Mace. And
right.
He also discovered Nelly. And I just caught a good vibe with Kuda. And he was actually the first person to ever ask me if I thought that I could write for other people. And so he...
Because that's become a major part of your life and career to this
point,
right?
It really, it did. And I was like, bro, I don't know, but I'll try. So he was the first person to even kind of open that world to me.
Right.
Which you know, I'm always forever grateful for it. But I also did turn that deal down eventually.
With Cuda?
Yeah.
Okay. So then what happened? I mean, this is still like while you're pretty much in high school or what?
Yeah. At this point, I'm a senior in high school, freshman in college.
And you're getting deals thrown at you at that point.
Yeah.
Where'd you decide to go to college?
I just went to Northridge. I went to Cal State Northridge. Yeah, right. Shout out the Matadors. You know what I'm saying? Not like that. Not that I just went, but I wasn't really. I always knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do since I was 12 years old. College was an afterthought.
Right.
Kinda, you know what I'm saying? But
so
I enjoyed my time there.
Right. So you're getting these brushes with the industry, but you're also in college and head's not fully in there. So what's the next move?
I just wrote songs through the whole thing.
Right.
In that time, I wrote songs for Snoop Dogg, Queen Latifah.
How does that kind of stuff happen? This is the kind of like inside baseball stuff that I think I know that I want to hear because I don't even know how that works. Like I get it. Like to write a song for another person, it takes a definite talent and like being able to kind of probably remove yourself from it. And think from somebody else's perspective, but also just like the behind the scenes of like how do you get invited to work with Snoop is like really interesting as well, I'm sure. So
it's like if you don't, it's hard to like pinpoint every single step, you know what I'm saying? It's like the butterfly effect.
Right, in
that aspect, like, but what it takes to do that is to be consistent, to show up. Relatively on time, always on time. We're not going to talk about this.
I don't hold that against you.
But no, to be consistent, to show up on time, to be in the space where you're open to playing whatever role is necessary while you're in the room.
Which is so hard from a lot of artists, I think, probably, is like swallowing that pride and being able to be that team player or play that role, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I think so. Yeah, sometimes like for me, I never, you know, I don't. I'm a little different in the aspect that I don't think about things. I guess that most people think about it is like for me, I just want to be the best version of myself, so I can be in a room with anybody, and I'm not really worried about what they're doing or what their agenda is. I just need to bring the best of the best, you know what I'm saying? I just got to bring the jizzle to the room.
Right.
I can't do anything else. And so I learned that very early, like, you're your only competition.
Right.
You're only competing to be better than you were yesterday.
Right.
So whoever's in the room, that shouldn't affect you and what you do. And so it's easier to lose the ego if you are in a room full of people who are quote-unquote better than you, quote unquote, more famous than you, quote unquote, more talented than you. You know, all these quotes, because at the end of the day, you know, you have to focus on being the best you and bringing the best you to the world every day. And so, you know.
And you figured that out as like a 20-year-old or what?
Yeah, I think so.
That's so crazy.
Not like, but, I mean, I don't know, but I had like a lot of good mentors. When you hang out with older people, like you said, being the oldest and being around older people and having those things, like my grandfather is a supremely intelligent being and, you know, he was a bodybuilder and just, you know, these things. And he just would always talk to me, but not talk to me like a child. He would talk to me like an adult. Like, what do you want to do? And present realities to me.
Right.
And try to show me what I should understand about these different worlds that I would grow up to navigate. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like that's all it's about. Like, I figure out the direction I want to go in. I halfway know my purpose, but I'm still figuring it out. That part I could go through. I understand what I'm talented at. I know I have to work hard for it. You know, half of my family is immigrants. Half of my family is poor. Some are well-to-do. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I understand all these dynamics. I just now I have to apply everything. But I have to, you know, I also have to maintain a supreme amount of faith and be willing to work and work through not seeing results sometimes. And I think, you know, where hard work meets preparation, opportunity.
As a kid, as this 20-year-old get in the studio with people like Queen Latifah and Snoop Dogg, these legends, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you know your role, like, when it's your turn to, like, kind of go, hey, I have this idea that I think is going to work, and get that kind of, like, the confidence to say that, and then but then also, like, the right time to pull back and just be the fly on the wall and observe? Like, as a youth, how did you inherently understand that?
Well, as a youth, you have to have some couth. They can't teach class, baby.
Right.
I don't know. Like, that's one of those things you got to try and find your, like...
Yeah.
You know, life is about finding your rhythm, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm not telling you that what works for me is going to work for you.
Totally.
Because that would be a lie. I've seen it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's just like... But you have to try to achieve some level of self-awareness that makes you confident enough to go out into this world and know that you're valuable. Your opinion is valuable. You know what I'm saying? Your presence is valuable. Your thoughts, your intellect, just it's valuable. But you can't give it to everybody because everybody doesn't know the value of something.
Mm.
You know, and that's just, but you... It's trial and error. Like, there's no shortcuts in that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I won't even attempt to act like I could give you that one-on-one, like, hey, well, if he does this and he smirks, he's probably not feeling it.
Do you have
Because you never know. Sometimes you misread it, but you want to study things. Like, you want to be a student of life. If you know what you want to do with your life, you want to be a student of that. And focus on your strengths and not your weaknesses. You know what I'm saying? Because then you just develop your weaknesses when you could have been focusing on your strengths. So it's like, if you see what works, do what works. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you know yourself well enough, like, boom, oh, this is going to work for that. This is going to work for that. But, you know, that's why old people don't tell you everything. They be like, you got to go and hit your head now.
But do you have any good trial and error stories? Maybe like something where you're like, oh, I understand this works. And like maybe a good like, oh, whoops, I fucked up story without like snitching on yourself too much.
I would say for me.
Yeah.
I know that going in and I do a certain amount of things to kind of keep balanced every day, to stay in tune every day. I know when I'm doing all the things that keep me balanced, keep me underwhelmed and just authentic to myself, that's when I do my best. When I'm not trying hard, when I'm not going out of my way, you know, to provide input if I don't have any or to do anything like that, when I'm just being me. Like, authentically me, no matter what it is. That could be extra.
Mm-hmm.
I could come in there, like, turned up, like, hey. But if that's where I'm at, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if I come in and try to be like, hey, but I'm not turned up.
You're
and I'm
forcing
like,
it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then that doesn't work. And
right.
I think that's always the key. I feel like people always know what they're supposed to do. It's just about if you're going to do it. Or not, you know?
Yeah. I kind of get this sense of you that you're just extraordinarily comfortable in your own skin, which is such a rarity in a lot of human beings, you know? And I have a feeling that this question is not going to go anywhere because you're just going to be like, well, yeah, I am. But nah. I mean, has it always been that way? Do you remember ever a time where you fucking felt awkward? Because you certainly don't give off any portrayal that you've ever been awkward. You just seem, like I said, very comfortable.
I was awkward very young, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, as a, like a kid, you know? But I was always kind of comfortable with being awkward. Like,
right.
You know, like, they cut off all my hair when I was, like, in the second grade.
Why?
And then sent me to school. It was just, that's a long story, but.
We got time, girl.
Yeah. Well, I went to my grandma's house for the weekend.
Uh-huh.
Came back home bald. And had to start a new school.
That week. Wow.
So, you know, my mom's trying to figure out how to get me some hair. And then they're like, well, we can't. You know what I mean? And so.
They say, oh, Michelle Andeggiacello, she's high right now. Don't worry about
it. Exactly. First of all, not even out. You know what I'm saying? So I go to, you know, and I went to the school, and I remember going through, like, the kids. We used to play Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I had to be the Putty Patrol.
I don't even know what that is. I'm too old for Power Rangers.
See? Yeah. I had to be the Putty Patrol, and they were just these little bald kind of indiscriminate characters,
right? Like,
that the Power Rangers would always beat up. They always died,
right?
Like, you know? But then I remember, like, the year I was able to be the Yellow Ranger. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's like you get involved. And I don't know. I feel like even that experience, you know, going through that, being the little bald girl.
Right.
Who was a tomboy, who was still a girl, but still cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think that kind of just helped me to be more comfortable with who I am. And also realizing that it's not changing. You know what I'm saying? It's not going anywhere.
And,
I've always had the full support of my family. I remember when I was bald, and Halloween was kind of near that time, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was Casper. But I remember my cousins and everybody carrying me around, you know, mm-hmm. like a ghost. So I remember just those things. Support, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, I felt like people always kind of felt who I was truly, despite what's going on the outside. Now I'm cool as hell. You see me. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I feel it.
You know what I'm saying?
Get the dirt out, yeah.
And I'm as cool as I feel, and,
yeah.
you know, and it kind of coincides. And sometimes that has to catch up. So for any child or person going through, like, that awkward phase, just know everything's temporary and you'll find your tribe, you know?
I feel like you should also be a motivational speaker.
Soon come.
Hey, yeah. Very motivative. It's like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to record some. I'm going to, like, listen to this recording and just, like, wake me up and feel good in the morning. Like, you're going to get through that awkward phase, Lee. Don't worry. One day you'll feel good about yourself.
No. But it's true, though. You know what I'm saying?
For
it's
real.
Like, because everything's not for everybody.
Well, I've talked to hundreds of artists on this show and just throughout my life of doing this and being involved in the music scene. But it's rare when you... It's rare to, like, meet somebody that's, like, you can tell that – I'm not trying to sound like I'm on your jock or something, but it's like you walk in and you have a presence where you could tell you're very comfortable with yourself. And a lot of people, I don't feel that way. I feel like, oh, this is a put-on or this is an act. But that that kind of essence and aura that you put out makes me feel like, oh – this is why people probably love working with her. And this is why she's written so many records for so many people. Because, like, you feel like you're easy to have in a room, right?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. But, I mean, also, you could co-sign that. Like, maybe that is part of the reason, yeah?
You know what?
All right, so
I don't know what to say. I just feel like, I feel like I'm cool.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm cool enough.
There you
know?
Go. There
like,
you go.
If you don't want to be cool, I'm not going to press you. I don't mind if you, you know what I'm saying? If you got an attitude, I'm not going to take it away.
Right.
Like, I get it. You know,
right.
like, for that, and that's what I'm saying. You know, you go through all these things in life,
mm-hmm.
and at some point you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Some shit I get.
Mm-hmm.
Some I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and then... But those are the challenges, and those are the things that I'm trying to grow that we all go through. But, like, the basic human aspect of the – I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all not going to be the same every day. And I think that maybe is what makes me easy to work with, is because I just understand. And I'm not about to press you if I don't. Like, if we going to get that close, then we will. If not, then we won't, you know.
Right.
And life goes on.
Who was the first artist you wrote for where you're like, damn, this shit is really, this is something? Was it Snoop?
Yeah, it's always been something to
right.
me, you know, and not like something extraordinary. Like, people just, you know, I don't know, it's like one thing. Like I said, I feel like if you're in the room, you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
But everything that I do means something to me.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean everything is huge. I know it's bigger than some people. Like, because for the people, they're like, oh, that was crazy. And I'm like, yeah, that was tight. Like,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, you don't get starstruck probably, huh?
I've a couple times.
Really?
But I just feel like, yeah, you know. But it all means something to me. Like,
yeah.
I try to only do things and be a part of things that means something to me. Things that I can stand on 20 years from now and be like, yeah, I did that.
Right.
And not like when they think, like, well, I just did that for a check, so it don't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't ever want to do that. I want to do it. Like, I want to always, you know, I don't know. They'll vary between number ones and whatever's and all that. Like, but I want it to always be something that really, like, affected change.
Right.
You know, so it all meant something. You know, it does. It just means something to me every time. And I try to only be a part of things that mean something.
I feel like that's a solid goal, is to, like, always be involved with something that means something to you. That seems like it would lead to a fucking very healthy life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like good psychological homeostasis. Yeah. But just to add some context to the conversation, tell the people, like, more of the folks that you have worked with, perhaps some songs that you've been involved with, just so people understand, like, what it is that we're talking about, basically. I know it's a long list.
You asked me this song. I suck at this. Like, every time. Like,
yeah, I'm sure.
But I've worked with, I'll just try, Snoop,
yeah,
Queen Latifah, Teddy Riley, Ty Dolla $ign, Chris Brown, Kid Ink, Nicki Minaj, Meek Mill. I said Puff Daddy already, right?
I said Puff, but yeah, Puff.
Kanye West.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Boosie Badass.
Oh, shit.
Iggy Azalea. This is not good.
That's okay.
I always forget Trey Songz. Did I say that?
No.
You can't even tell at this point. You're not even listening.
I'm fully involved in listening, right. Trust me.
Dang, who? Oh, let me think. Lupe Fiasco.
Oh, you just I mentioned that on my intro. You just had a video come out where you're the featured artist on this Lupe song,
with
right?
Lupe.
Yeah.
Oh, we should go back. Features. T.I.
You had a feature with T.I.?
Called Lazy. Yeah, yeah.
No,
featured
shit.
On there. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Twice. And then we written songs together.
Nice.
Okay, that's not it, but I forgot.
Legends. So I think what I know you most from, or what I think...
Fauntleroy, 1500, okay. Terrace Martin.
Oh, yeah.
I never want to forget anybody. 1500
or Nothing is a... For those of you listening, 1500 or Nothing is a legendary production crew in Los Angeles.
Oh, and the best band in the world.
Great band. Fantastic. Do you do a lot... Like, you do a lot of work with Ty, right? Did you work on Free TC a lot?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So, you know Andy?
Of course. I just left the studio with Ty.
Oh, shit.
Andy was there.
Andy,
love one of Ponytail, man.
Yeah, little short-ass Andy. So, yeah. Okay, look, I have a connection. We have one degree of separation then, because Andy used to be one of my best friend, David's roommates. They lived together right down the street here in Silver Lake.
That's dope.
Yeah, and so it's just funny because I would go over there for, like, whatever, to hang out, and I'd be like, oh, Andy, what are you up to? Oh, man, you know, just got out of the studio with Ty, and he'd be like, yeah, he has these ladies out that write the raps and everything, and they're, like, hella cool. So I was always hearing about it, and then I read about it, and I'm like, oh, this is one of them. This is one that Andy was talking about. And so tell me about Free TC is one of my favorite records of the last, like, 3 years, maybe. Like, I love that record. And it's, like, Sensitive Thuggery or something. Like, it's so beautiful. So tell me about the writing process with someone like Ty, who you work very closely with.
Well, Ty's my brother. It's just, like, you know, we could finish each other's sentences.
Really?
And that's kind of, like, the thing.
We
just
had
that chemistry from the gate. He's also from the west side of South Central.
Yeah.
So we have, like, a lot of common friends. Like, we've been doing our thing around the city for a while. And Ty was just, it's so funny, because Ty, he just wanted to work. He would just always hit me, like, through our friends. And if he'd see me, like, let's work. And I'm like, for sure, bro, we gonna work.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was just rapping, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Just rapping on my shit in the studio. I'm in my studio every day, making 3 songs a day. Like, I'm just trying to rap and get better, you know? And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna do it. Then he finally has me, I finally go over there, then he has me do this song, like, where he has me rapping, like, with a girl, like a girl rapping about a dude. And I'm like, bro. This not what I'm trying to do, bro. You know? But I still did it because it was hard. Like,
right.
You know, he's so incredible. He's, like, so musically talented. And then we just started working from there. Like, you know, I would work with Ty every single day. We would just work when we didn't even have anything to work on. There was no projects, really. He was just starting to work and develop YG sound and all that very early. Then, you know what I'm saying? We were just doing so many things, but we just... always kept working. So I'm very grateful for him to even go out his way to kind of initiate that process. And
were you
to
around
be
during
so
like the tutored and booted days back
yeah,
then?
Yeah, I was around, but I was a little separated, man. I was on my own thing.
Okay.
Kind of around the city. Just I was turned up.
I remember seeing him perform, like Ty performing Tutored and Booted at the Spliff.
Yeah.
Which was like a West Side, which was like a West LA thing over in like Westchester kind of.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember the Spliff?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I used to go there all the time. Fucking Val the Vandal and Verbs.
Yeah,
used to throw
yeah,
that.
Val, Verbs. I think even, damn, what's bro used to be at the Pit?
Daylight?
Daylight, too.
I used to see him rap there as, yeah.
I was thinking of the other DJ dude.
Oh, Rob Shot. Rob?
Rob no? It was another one.
Okay,
though.
Never mind. Damn, yeah.
It's a few. You know the scene.
Yeah,
West
the scene
side.
The scene is small, you yeah. know. And so that's damn near
the
a decade.
The scene is
ago.
Actually big.
It's huge, absolutely. But it's everybody's got those connections. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. So you've been with Ty for a hot while then.
Yeah. We've done like every project together.
Right.
It's my brother.
Yeah, for sure.
Always till the end of time. Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis.
Working with someone as melodic as him, does that come natural to you writing melodies and stuff too, or like you say a lot when I hear you talk about writing, you talk about like I wanted to gas, I want to rap, I want to rap,
lyrics,
I want to rap.
Yeah,
lyrics. And I mean like listening to 7 Days in Atlanta, it's pretty bar heavy. Like there's a lot of songs but a lot of raps. There's a few melodies, there's a few hooks, but I mean overall it's pretty like straightforward rapping. So does melody come natural to you working with someone like Ty or is it
well,
a stretch?
You know, I mean he's definitely like if we're gonna talk about the melody, I'll definitely let him handle it. You
right.
know what I'm saying? It's like
right.
different specialties, you
okay,
know what I'm
yeah.
saying? Like jujitsu.
Right.
Yeah, you know I mean judo.
Uh huh.
You know what I'm saying? So,
so he might have a lead like, line, and then you come in with like.
So it varies though.
Yeah.
Like with everything, it always varies, and it's always about the song. What's gonna make the song best, and what comes through? I'm definitely more of a lyric person. Like, the beat could be whack, but if you bustin', then I'll listen to it.
Right.
I know some people that can't even take it. Like if they put on the beat in 10 seconds, it's horrible. They just don't even want to hear what the person is saying.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I just feel like, you know, lyrics are very important, and I try to do that and have that balance of melody. I do, you know, like to sing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I do that more, you know, now. But then that's also like. You have to build your confidence with that. I wasn't like coming in the room like
well,
we talked about earlier, saying anything like, "Hey, sing this." Oh.
Right, right.
No, no. Nah,
like, but at the same time, that, like nowadays you know in the modern rap dichotomy, it seems like having a little bit of melody in your raps is just part of the fucking game now. You know what I mean? Like everybody sings while they rap. It seems like.
But I've always had like melody, but like it. I got bounce, you know, pocket, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's other different technical things to rap that are a little bit lost in this age of rap.
Mm-hmm.
So what used to be melody or what melody is now was bounce, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What you doing with that pocket, ins and outs, pickups, drop-offs, ad-libs, inflections, you know what I'm saying? And so, yeah. But I melody is necessary. I grew up on R&B. I love, you know, New Jack Swing, Timbaland and Missy, like heavy influences in my music still. Static Major, you know.
Mm-hmm. Your writing process, does it involve actually writing anymore?
Yeah.
You do?
I write on paper.
Yeah.
I write in my phone. I freestyle songs sometimes all the way down.
Right.
I'll do it line by line. Whatever it takes
to
get the song done in the vibe. If I'm in a real, real crazy vibe, and sometimes you could tell with 7 Days in Denver, I kind of got back into like the vibe and freestyling like the whole tracks and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Are you always walking around like with when random thoughts hit your head, just like plugging them into your phone and shit like that so you don't forget?
Yeah, I record a lot of voice notes and then I write in my phone, but I usually never go back to them. So
right,
so it's kind of pointless. But at least to get it out, and then hopefully it just come back in my subconscious later on. You know
right, or even if it's just like, oh, one day you're like out of ideas, like, oh, maybe I could go through this and see what I have. Yeah,
yeah, it's very rare, but.
Yeah,
it's always cool to just get them out and have them.
Well, so during the eras where you're talking about, oh, you know, I was just trying to work on my raps and get better and this and that and the other. Like, is there a part of your brain that compartmentalizes like your artistry versus your songwriting for other people? Like, do you know when you're writing something that like, oh, this is a Jizzle song as compared to like, oh, I should maybe try to sell this one?
Yeah, I do. I feel like when I'm usually in the studio with an artist, so then it's not super hard to differentiate, you know what I'm saying? But there are some songs where, like, I made it, and I'm like, all right, well, shit, it would sound hard if you did it. And then you just kind of feel it. I think they feel it, too, and then I think it's just, like, some things that have to be, you know, spoken from the horse's mouth. And, you know, but that's never been my main concern. I feel like I'm always going to get to write my next best song. Like, you know, like, I'm good today, but I'm going to be better tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just always my mind frame. So the goal is to get the music out to the people so that, you know, it could do what it's supposed to do, stir some things up, create some change. And so I don't hold onto anything too tight, but then I know what I might need to just, you know what I'm saying, keep.
Mm-hmm. What is it about the last like couple years, or I mean, I could be totally misjudging this, but it seems like now you're taking a step to kind of step more into the limelight as an artist and putting out solo material. You've got what, 4 tapes lined up?
Yeah.
Okay, so you already put out 7 Days in Atlanta.
7 Days in Denver.
7 Days in Denver. Is it out already?
Nope.
Okay, but that's coming.
Yeah, we're going to drop the single on 420.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, 5280.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, and then first time ever.
Bang, bang.
So now you get to hold me to it.
All right, yeah. That's always the scary thing, is like when you promise a date and then it gets to that date and you're like, oh, fuck, I got to get it out. I made a promise. And then are the other city? It's always going to be 7 days in a certain city, right?
So, yeah, it'll be a project each quarter.
Yeah.
We go to a different city for 7 days, and then we'll make an album, an EP, 7 songs, 7 days.
Yeah. And so, I mean,
completely original music, a different executive producer every time.
Atlanta seems to make sense because Atlanta is Atlanta, and Atlanta is fucking killing it right now. So, like, 7 days in Atlanta, it seems like you go down there and get some music finished. But, like, where did Denver come from?
Don't worry about it. When you hear it, you're going to hear it.
Really?
No, let me tell you about Denver.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Because, you know, I feel like what Denver has been able to do socially and politically over the past year and a half, 2 years, and then if you really been doing the research in the past 3-4 years, then you kind of know where the next influx in culture is going to be, because when there's forward thinking happening politically, socially, it's bound to happen, and financially, economically, it's bound to happen culturally.
Are we talking about legalized weed? Or what are we talking about?
Yeah.
In Denver?
Legalized weed, all that, the whole thing.
What else are they doing politically? What else are they doing politically out there? Well, I haven't been up on it in Denver.
Yeah. Well, mainly the legalized weed, but from medically to recreationally, and just that influx of economy there.
Right, because they're getting so much tax money off that now.
Exactly.
Like, it's funding.
So then you have the schools, you have the entrepreneurs, you have all the creatives going down there to create some things. And I just felt like that's important to not only acknowledge, but to create a relationship with.
Mm.
And it was just things come to you, and then you got to learn to trust yourself and execute. And I went down there, and I had the most amazing time, and then I made, like, amazing music.
Really?
Like, it's crazy.
And so
it's like, you made this in Denver?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's popping down there. I'm going back for 420.
Did you know anybody out there?
Nobody.
How'd you
navigate?
Yeah, who'd you find?
God's my
really.
God's my manager, and the universe is my agent.
Well, really, but do you take a team out with you? Like,
no, I took my team. Of course, we went out there. We didn't go but we booked a studio.
Yeah,
we got an Airbnb. You know, I brought my engineer. I brought the executive producer of 7 Days in Atlanta, Rob Holiday. I brought my producer and DJ, C. Gutta, who did 7 Days in Atlanta. He executive produced 7 Days in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then we left the rest up to chance, and it worked out.
Nice.
Shout out to Lizzie Brody, who did a great job of being our liaison. Every city will have a liaison, but we didn't really know anybody in Denver, so we didn't have Lizzie before we got there. But once we got there, we met her and we clicked up and made everything happen. It was popping.
Now, as far as the concept of the project goes, it's called 7 Days in Denver, but did you spend a few days out there before the official 7 days started to figure it out? Or are you just like, that was it, 1 week?
1 week.
Really?
Everything. Make the music in 1 week. Yeah. I didn't hear no beats before.
Really?
I didn't do anything.
Where did the inspiration for this come from? Like this kind of like mental project, it seems like.
I came up with the idea in the studio in June 2016.
Yeah.
And I just wanted, I'm like, oh, it'd be so crazy. Like, we go make an album. Because I make, like, when I go in the studio, my average is, like, 3 songs a day.
Right.
Like, and that's just, I'm going to do that regardless. And sometimes it's full songs, it's hooks or whatever, but 3 solid ideas a day.
Yeah.
So that's just what I'm working with. But sometimes I go and I'll do, like, 10 songs in a day.
Wow.
And I'll do, like, you know what I'm saying? So I never know if the vibe is right, then I could do whatever. And I just feel like it was important. Like, if I could just create the vibe, at that time I was around super dope people. My sister PJ, who signed to Atlantic, and my videographer and brother Nick Bardo, who does like all of my content, like he was there. It was like my first time meeting him, and I was like, bro, we could make this album, this thing, this TV show, this like, we could do it in 7, we could do it.
Yeah.
And at the time I was still like, oh, we could pick an artist, any artist, and that's what I want to do. And then I was just like, well, I'll be the artist then.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So that was the catalyst.
And I just kind of did it. Yeah. And then it was just, and then, you know, with music, I just had to, for me, because I've been doing it for a long time. Everybody asks me these things, and I'm doing all these interviews now, and I kind of got to, damn, go back and kind of retrace my steps and everything. I'm like, I got to find something I could be passionate about, something I could do for the next 10 years. Like, I've been doing this for 10 years.
Right.
Easy. Maybe a little longer, you know? So when I thought about the 7 Days project, I thought, like, you know, that's something I could do for 10 years. It kind of encompasses everything that I love. People and food and dance and travel and music and just, like, to have this relationship commemorated with this project. With each and every city that I go to, it's special, you know? It's not like, it's not just rapping for the sake of rapping, or, you know, you know, it's deeper than money. It's deep.
It's a real passion project.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a beautiful description. Do you have ideas for the next cities?
Yeah, we're doing 7 days in Philly in June.
Oh.
And then we're doing 7 days in LA this year. I thought it would be good to just
That's gotta be the crescendo,
yeah. At the end of this year. So it'll be a project, like I said, every quarter.
I got family out in Philly, I'll have them bring you some cheesesteaks or something.
Hey, that's what's up. See, that's what I'm saying. We say where we going.
Shout out my cousin Tyler, Real T Mokovitz,
on Instagram. Tyler.
He's a photographer.
We're gonna pull up. Come on, baby. Tyler. We gonna be looking for you, baby.
There you go.
Yeah, like,
it's a family,
you know,
affair. You feel
let's
me?
Do it. Yeah. That's what it's about. And then I'm so excited. And it's just like every time as the awareness grows, like more people want to get involved. Mm-hmm. And then that's what it's about. It's like we're going and making it for the people, with the people. And sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. You know, with Denver, I knew it was going to be one of those things that made sense to nobody until after it's done. But don't worry about that.
Right. When I heard that it was like I said, 7 days in Atlanta. Perfect sense.
Yeah.
I heard 7 days in Denver. I went, isn't it still snowy there? Like,
what? Trying to actually, you know what? We were praying for it to snow.
Really?
Snow one time.
Really?
The day we left, came down all white.
You probably don't see a lot of snow, or what?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm like Big Bear and stuff that. Like, I've been, but like, I've seen snow in my lifetime. But I just like, dang, I'm gonna be in Denver. It's gonna snow. I'm gonna shoot the crazy photos and all white the snow with the. Right. We went crazy. Don't worry about it. Shout out to Denver, 5280 Mile High City. They showed me super duper love, and I just want to just thank, you know, my liaisons for showing me around the city. It was crazy.
Do you perform a lot? You get out performing?
Yeah, I do. I'm doing more shows now.
Yeah,
I just did South by, where I did like 6 or 7 shows.
How did that go?
It went amazing.
Yeah?
I'm actually performing with Lupe tomorrow, I think.
Oh, really?
At the Novo, yeah. I think we're going to do jumps, so it's going to be tight.
That'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wonder about that, like, being as much of a studio head as you are, like, if it's one of those things where you have gotten to have that time performing on stage, if it's something that comes natural to you, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I used to perform a lot, like, starting out, and, you know, when you're writing them,
getting your
chops up. I
perform
less, and, like, but, yeah, I love performing.
Really?
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm not a bad performer. I'm trying to get better.
Right. I don't think you would be bad at it.
Yeah, I'm not a bad one. So I enjoy it. I love it. Like, that's it, though, you know? Like, everything else in between and, you know, I love people, so I don't mind interviews and connecting with people. I know, like, some people don't like it, but...
Yeah, it's some people love it, some people hate it. I mean, it's one of those things. I try to make the interviews as, like, revealing without being invasive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, like, bug any... I'm basically out here trying not to Ebro it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to fucking talk shit about my guests.
Shout out to Ebro. He just premiered Melanin today.
I like that. I do love that song, but...
But nah,
Ebro, stop bullying people, Ebro. No.
Yeah. You know, everybody has, maybe I haven't ran into that yet, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, I've actually kind of been in a situation where I might have bullied a few people.
I'm sure.
But I didn't mean to. Right. It would just be like, come on, bro, you got to do your homework. You asked me to be here.
Well, and that's kind of the thing is I don't think you're going to run into anybody bullying you because you already, like, the proof is in the pudding. Like, you already have, like, a huge portfolio of work, you know what I mean? Whereas some of the young artists who they pop off and have one song, I get it, like an old interviewer's like instinct is to be like, well, what do you know about Nas, young man? You know what I mean? It's like, who cares?
Yeah,
that's just my opinion. Who knows?
Yeah, nah, no.
But anyhow, Jizzle, this was cool. I think
is it over?
I mean, I think we've been going like almost an hour already.
Oh yeah, probably. We could do this all day.
I know, it's very easy. yeah, I mean, we've been doing pretty much an hour. Right. So, I guess like tell me about future plans, like your goals that you're putting out there. Like, do you see yourself, like I said, continuing to step out more into the limelight as an artist? I know you're always going to be in the studio, but do you think you're going to spend more of your time in the studio working on your on stuff for you, or is it going to be just continuing to kind of like whatever happens, happens?
Nah, man, Jizzle here.
Yeah,
yeah. I think I'm gonna. I know I'm gonna focus on my artistry.
Yeah,
I'm always gonna be a songwriter. I'm a writer at heart. I'm gonna write all types of things, you know, music, books, blogs, like, you know, being a writer, that's just something in you.
Mm-hmm.
There's always gonna be something to express. My immediate goals are to kind of create the music and the atmosphere in this industry and push what I feel like, well, just to relay my message, you know, for the things that I can't readily get out through another vessel, you know. That's my immediate focus, and to continue to kind of break down barriers for people who look like me, that sound like me, for the unconventional person who's talented. It might not seem like this is the way it's supposed to go. I feel like because I started so early, that kind of opened it up, you know, in a lot of ways for a lot of people, to where, you know, you're not like, oh, well, girls can't write raps for boys and they can't do none of that. And
right.
Like, you know, I think we dispelled all those rumors and we started that early. So I feel like it's just important for me to kind of just to continue to develop and in the forefront, like in the public eye. And so you know that you don't have to be one thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, because I'm not.
I love that statement that you don't have to be one thing, and I also love the statement you said a second ago about wanting to be a representative for people who look like you, talk like you, et cetera, et cetera. So you've probably already experienced to some extent where, like, journalists are going to have this narrative about you, about, like, what you mean to the LGBT community.
Gay and
right,
writing.
Like, that's going to be, like, the headline, like, oh, queer rapper, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've seen it.
How do you feel about that? And, like, how are you going to deal with that throughout your career moving forward? Because I just don't think it matters. Like I'm not on some like, oh, I don't see color shit. Like I'm just saying, like to me, like for journalists to latch onto that, to give the elevator pitch of like, oh, she's a queer rapper who wrote for guys. Like it's just so simple and it doesn't really look at the artistry at all. So,
well, I think it speaks more to them than me.
Right.
And I feel like, just knowing who I am, I don't mind. You know, I feel like people are going to put you in boxes to kind of, they have to digest you somehow. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And I don't mind how you digest me, whatever it takes to get me in your world, in your realm. And then, you know, you can hear things like this where you get to really know me and kind of understand, like, that's the last thing we're talking about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I don't mind that. I've always considered myself just Jizzle. Always. Even when I used to go by Lady G. So anybody listening, go do your research. You can do your little thing. And then you'll know where I came from. But I've always just kind of felt like who I am and not like what I do.
Right.
Who I'm around or who I'm associated with. Mm-hmm. What I've done. I don't how I look. Those things are not me. Like, I am who I am. And if you take half the time to kind of get to know that, then you'll understand everything that I'm about. And those are not going to be, like, your first adjectives when you use to describe me, you know?
Right.
And so I'm going to always be just Jizzle. I don't feel like just a female rapper. I feel like, you know, you could put me in a room with anybody, any one person, male, female. Anything they want to be, transgender, LGBT, right. Anything.
Right.
And come
you're,
see
and
me.
And you're going to chew their food in a battle.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's just like, but if you need that to digest that, you got to understand, I went through this already. Right. I battled all the boys and that's all they could do.
Right.
You're good for a girl.
Right.
And I get that, but that's the, you know, that's where we at. So when I realize that's not true, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then you move on to the next thing. And I don't mind it at all, because it's really, for all the journalists and the blogs and everybody who thought it was dope to tell my story, like, I think that's an honor for them to even take the time.
Yeah.
Because you got to think about how many people in this world that they are, how much pressure they get from whoever, whatever, to tell whatever story might be important for the time and for everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't take any of that for granted. So if you have to have a weird-ass headline, I'm not tripping.
Right.
The people who are going to read it, that's who it was for. Because if you come to do a story on me, you can't really do nothing that's not the truth. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so when they read it, they'll get the truth, and then we'll get to, like, the real things and not the surface things.
Right.
And so, you know.
Right.
I'm all zinned out on the joint. I'm trying to not be. You want to see the thug? What's up, Lee? Right. You want to see the thug?
One last question that we'll kind of wrap up on. You spoke a little bit about Denver's progressive politics.
Yeah.
We're living in a fucking crazy era right now. Like, the last 8 years have been fairly chill, and we're onto some new I don't know,
some other shit.
Yeah, some other shit. Like, do you find yourself being more politically active lately, or more outspoken about politics than previously, or do you know what I mean? Like, how are you coping? What's your self care like?
Well, my thing is, I try not to act like I'm well versed on things that I'm not all the way well versed. Mm-hmm. I have ideas and thoughts on reality and perception and what you welcome into your world and what the world is about. You know, I feel like just to give a general message for anybody who might be listening to this and trying to figure out their place and whatever's going on, because you never know, you know, and unless you really want to take the time to educate yourself on it, then I don't feel like you should speak like an expert on it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I feel like in my heart and like my soul, I feel like it's just important for everybody to find out what they feel comfortable with in terms of working on to develop to make a difference in this world.
Mm.
In a micro way. Like, you know, start with your immediate. Mm-hmm. Let you be the change that you want to see. There I know go. That's very cliche.
But it's real.
But no, it is. And you have to start there. And then you'll see the ripple effect, you know. But generally, on a macro scale, I feel like destruction before the rebirth.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and shit's got to get worse before it can get better.
Exactly. And then the only way that you can ensure your sanity, your survival, however, if you want to make it dire, make it dire. That might be your thing. It might
inspire you.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, it might put the fire under you to do it. Make it a dire situation if you want. Mm. But the only way to get through that is for you to know, like, this is what happening. This is what's happening. And so you need to develop your skill and hone your craft and focus on your gift and what you're good at and make people smile. Make people want to do their best and be a part of good things and great things. And nobody can, like, stop that. You know what I'm saying? Despite what goes on, we all gonna go through things, you know? Like, you can't dodge that. But what you could only tailor your response and develop a strong mindset to handle whatever may come at you. So in uncertain times, I still have hope.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
Hope is the most addictive drug on the planet, you know?
Yeah, I mean.
So, Jizzle, thank you for coming through. I appreciate it.
Lee, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we go, tell the people where they can find you online. Your Twitter and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, you can find me online, Jizzle. If you just type in GIZZLE.
The SEO is strong.
It's super strong, yeah, right? Am I lying?
It'll pop right strong? Up. It'll pop
like,
right
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but so everything.
Your SoundCloud's I am Jizzle.
Yeah, all of my social media handles, I was going to say, it's I'm Jizzle.
Yeah.
It's I-M as in Mary, G-I-Z-Z-L-E.
There you go.
And yeah, so yeah, if you just type in G-I-Z-Z-L-E, you'll find me.
Yep. And so the way that I found you was.
Well, that's a good question.
Through the song Oh Na Na.
Okay.
I just was like. I scour through SoundCloud. I mean, not SoundCloud. I scour through Spotify. And I just heard that, and I went, "What is this?" It reminds me. It reminded me initially because of the beat. It reminded me of 6'7", a little bit. Like, yeah, and like it has that. It got that little. It's got that little vibe to it in the background of the Oh Na Na Na. But then, like, right when your voice kicked in, I went, "Oh shit, what is this?" And the hook is so catchy, and so that led me to 7 Days in Atlanta, and 7 Days in Atlanta is a very easy to listen to 9 tracks, goes by fast. And
seven.
Is it 7? I thought it was 9. Okay.
It's only 7.
I believe you that it's 7.
7 days, 7 songs.
7 days, 7 songs. That makes more sense, actually.
But you know what? Denver is almost like 10 songs, is and it? I don't know what to do because I'm like, I got to keep my 7 strong, you know what I'm saying?
You could, I don't know. That's a tough one because if they're 10 songs and they're all strong, like, why not keep them on? That was all a bar.
You
there's
heard.
10 songs and they're all strong. Keep them on. Come on. I can't help it.
Let's go.
We can't help it.
Kind of neat.
We're in here, right? But yeah, it's a very easy to listen to project. As soon as it's over, you're just going to want to press play again. And I said, you're portfolio and your history as a songwriter already speaks loudly for itself, and I think, like, now that you are taking the opportunity to step into the limelight as a solo artist, I think it's gonna great things are gonna happen for you. And I think, like, with the aura that you emit, you just can't help it. You feel me? You just can't help it.
Thank you so much.
Right.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming
in. This is fun. I can't believe it's over already.
I know. It goes by fast. I'm telling
you. Yeah, you did tell me.
Everyone goes an hour, and I go, trust me, it's like, it's going to go fast.
I'm like, an hour? That's it?
You can find Jizzle at I Am Jizzle, and you can find us at Kinda Neat and youtube.com/Kinda Neat, where you're going to see Jizzle perform. Where are you going to perform?
Oh, no, no, no.
Fantastic. I requested that one personally. I feel like it was like me going to a junior high dance and be like, hey, excuse me, can you play this song? Because I was like, hey, I really want her to do this one. So I'm excited to hear you perform that live. So go to youtube.com/kindaneat where you're going to see Jizzle perform Oh Na Na. And yeah, look at a bunch of other videos while you're there. And with that being said, that was Jizzle. I am Lee, and this was Kinda Neat.